Hi, this is your host, Keneal Joyce, and welcome to Aloud. Today, I've got something special to offer you. It's one of our skill building series. Earlier this year, I offered you a skill building series about how to shift you and your team out of drama. And today's episode is a little bit different. Today, I'm offering you a training that I've actually developed for a client, and it's all around design thinking. And design thinking is a powerhouse of a skill that literally can be applied to any situation where there is a problem to solve. And who doesn't have a problem to solve? So design thinking was created by firms like IDEO and the Stanford D School, where I used to be on faculty. I've done some coaching there. I've worked with their graduate program. And I am just so into this field of work. So I'm really excited to offer with you this skill, which is especially important to me because it's really where I cut my teeth as a facilitator and a coach. And it's where I discovered that no matter what task you're working on, the work is always the inner work, that the breakthroughs come not just in whatever your innovation is, whatever it is that you're designing, but really in this internal opening of yourself when you're most interested in how to serve, in how to best understand your users and how to really, really serve them. And that's where the breakthroughs come from. So I'm very excited to offer this to you. Now, this training is available to you. Actually, it's a whole series of videos that I developed with my colleague, Luke Entrep, who you met in episode 2 of Aloud. He was our expert in shadow. So you can go and check that out at keneal.com, aloudpodcast.com, and it's all available on our YouTube channel. But if you go to this episode's show notes, which are right there in your description in the podcasting app, you can click through and we'll take you to the series of videos. And please, I encourage you to share this with your teams and anybody else who might find it interesting and useful. And there's a lot more where this came from. So please click into the show notes for further resources on design thinking. If this turns you on, I would really love to hear from you. It's a very different piece of content, and I think you'll find it really interesting. Let's get started.
You are allowed to be whole. Allowed.
When you were born, you were whole, perfect. And somewhere along the way, you learned that parts of you were not allowed here. What are the pieces of you that you've put into the basement? The parts of you that we cannot see anymore or that you cannot even remember? And how can you reclaim the wholeness that is your birthright? I'm Dr. Keneal Joyce, and I'm here to join you in exploring these questions and many more you didn't even know you were allowed to ask. You are allowed to grow. You are allowed to dream. You are allowed to be exactly who you are and to become the next version of who you want to be. Start your journey of exploration with me right now on Aloud.
Hi, I'm Keneal.
And I'm Luke.
And we're here today to talk to you about design thinking, which is one of the coolest processes and skill sets that I know of that you can apply to almost any problem. Design thinking was created initially as a way to create more innovative ideas, specifically in the area of product design and industrial design. But what has been developed is a really rigorous but also very flexible methodology that now is being applied to healthcare problems, organizational problems, leadership problems, process design, service design. Probably most of the things that you see and touch every day have been influenced in some way by part of the design thinking process, if not the entire thing. And a lot of the great work and resources that have been done around design thinking and really nailing this process down were done at the Stanford Design School, the D School, the Hasso-Plattner Institute of Design, where I'm occasionally on faculty. And there we've applied that to product design, also organizational leadership, strategic pivots, innovation road mapping, a whole host of things. Another great place to go for resources is the amazing design firm IDEO, and they have an incredible toolkit of videos and lessons and lectures that you can dial into, and you can even join one of IDEO.org's projects and start applying it in a social cause kind of a setting, which is super cool.
Yeah, and I learned a lot of these skills myself through the healthcare industry, healthcare innovation, and a wonderful organization that's bringing design thinking to healthcare is the Center for Care Innovations. And so all of these design thinking, this process, these skills, the goal with all of this is innovation. And just a word or two about innovation. Innovation is coming up with novel ideas, and there's actually a skill set and mindsets that can help us come up with novel ideas. Innovation is about applying an idea that exists out in the world in a new context. And so when we look at changing the context and really understanding a problem in a deep way, that's when new and novel ideas emerge.
And what's really neat about design thinking in particular is that unlike just a kind of blanket creativity process, it really helps you hone in on which of these ideas is going to be most useful to your target audience. And we call those your users. So what does your user really need and want? What are the problems that they experience? And how are they using your innovation in the real world? By answering all of these questions through this design thinking process, you really can remove a lot of the risk from your innovation. And one of the reasons why organizations often don't innovate is because of risk. Even in our own lives, we often don't innovate on our own life patterns because it feels too risky to change things up. So we really want to invite you to think about where could you be using design thinking in your own life? Where do you really want to shake things up and get some better results? So we wanted to talk you through the design thinking process as a whole. After this video, we're going to be diving deeper into each one of these specific areas and giving you some specific tools and skill sets and mindsets that you can apply in your own life and in your own job. Right. So the design thinking process contains 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps. And this is a very iterative process. I want to say that up front. The first step in the design thinking process is empathize. This is where we really get to know our users and get to know the world through their eyes, where we really want to feel their feelings and get into their environment, into their mindset, so that we can create a better solution for them. The second step is where we're defining the specific problem. So we're not just from our perspective, but actually from the user's perspective. So the empathy process helps us to better understand the problem and define it from their perspective. After we've really understood the problem, only then do we begin to ideate, come up with new ideas. This is the big game changer of design thinking. So in lots of organizations, lots of creative work, we begin with ideation. And ideation is super fun, but we often don't have enough information yet to design something extremely useful or extremely novel for a user who's not us. So we really hold off on jumping to solutions until we get to this phase. And ideation, brainstorming, actually has some guidelines, some rules, some best practices that research has shown that really make the process more effective. Some of my research I did at Berkeley also was on ideation and the importance of constraints around ideation. So there's a lot that we really understand about this process, and we'll be diving into that in another video. After we've gathered a lot of ideas and we've tried to really break the boundaries around what was possible, we begin to prototype. This is another thing that's unique about the design thinking process, is that we're gonna make a really scrappy prototype, which is basically a test, an experiment, a really low fidelity, often pretty inexpensively done mock-up of one of the ideas that we want to test out in the world. And then we take the prototype out into the world and we test it. Lots of different ways to test it out. And the goal of this is we want to learn, how is this really being received? How is it being used? How is it being understood? Is it clear what you're supposed to do with this? And are people getting the value out of it that we're wanting them to get? Is it solving the problem? So you can really think of design thinking as a massive learning process where you're testing new hypotheses, you're understanding things from a different perspective. And that's where the innovation comes from, is this really getting into the user's mindset.
Great. So next, we're going to explore what those mindsets are.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a look.
All right. So here are the design thinking mindsets. Curiosity is maybe the most important. This just simply means greeting it with questions rather than already knowing the answers. Another important one is rigor, making sure that we have the processes around this to really draw out the most novel ideas. Creativity, when a team can really feel creative, it's much more engaged in finding these new, fresh ideas. And greeting all things with beginner's mind.
Also, really important and unique to design thinking is empathy, really getting into the mindset and the heart of what it's like to be our user and what they really care about. Learning and focus learning focus and a growth mindset. So we're always seeking to improve, and we're not seeking to be right or to justify our own idea. Contextual thinking. So when we're getting to understand a problem or a user, we want to understand not just that in isolation, but in its whole entire social and cultural and emotional context. And lastly, iteration. So in design thinking, the cool thing is you're never done, but you can be done pretty quickly. You can be done pretty quickly, and then you keep going and you keep going, you keep learning and adding and iterating and making things better. So it's a highly flexible process. These mindsets, by the way, are also extremely valuable for life in general. So enjoy getting into this really fun mindset, and I think you're gonna have a really good time with the process.
We'll start to dive into some specific skills that can help you design new products or something new about your life. We're going to take a little closer look at a tool used in the empathizing mindset, which is interviewing, end user interviews. So this is really important for us to really be able to shape and form our understanding of the problem. And until we really have a deep understanding of the problem and the environment that the problem exists in, we don't have an opportunity to create something new.
Great thing about interviews, they're very easy to do. They can be fast. You can do a lot of them in a short amount of time. And there's opportunities to do interviews all around you. So let's dive into what this process looks like, Luke.
Yeah, so the first step is really understanding the space that the problem exists in. So we want to start to narrow down our focus and really understand specifically what problem we want to start to solve.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to keep it somewhat open, where we're focused on a problem, but we have that understanding that we might not know exactly what the problem is yet, but we have a space that we're exploring that we're going to stay focused on. Second step is identifying your users. So once you know what the problem space is you'd like to explore, you want to think about, who does this impact? Who does this impact that I specifically care about and that I want to solve the problem for? I want to find an opportunity to innovate for them.
Yeah, the third step is, once we've identified these users, and these users may be users of a product, mm-hmm. or user could mean something as simple as the team that I'm leading or the people that exist in this problem space. So end user, think about it in a broad sense. And once we've identified them, the third step is to go find them in their native environment, mm-hmm. right? Go be where they live.
I've done user interviews on the train. I've done them at coffee shops. I've done them on the street. I've done them inside of organizations.
I've done them on the Embarcadero in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I've done them in waiting rooms in health clinics.
Right. You can take this anywhere. Okay, then, and the reason why native sitting? Why is that important?
Yeah, I mean, once we see them in their environment and once we're talking to them in the environment, they're much closer to the experience and the problem, right? So mm-hmm. rather than calling them after the fact, we can actually see their behaviors, the way that they're moving through the space, which mm-hmm. sometimes is really important.
Yes, hugely. All right, step four, ask questions and observe. So they're in their native space. You're going to get to ask questions, but it's not just an information gathering exercise. It's also, as you're asking the questions, observing them doing some activity, ideally where they're interacting with that problem space. So if I'm going to go out and design an onboarding process for my team of employees, I would want to observe actual employees going through an onboarding process and not just ask them questions, but see what's happening there.
What are some of your favorite questions?
Oh, gosh. I love, what are you doing there? What does that do for you? Why does that part matter?
I like, one of my favorites is, tell me more about that. Tell me more about what you're doing there. Or tell me more about why that's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this important to you?
I also love to ask, you know, is there anything that's kind of challenging about this? Anything that you've had to develop a workaround for? Any kind of pain points here?
How does this make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
Or why does this matter to you?
How did you learn to do this?
What's one thing, if there was one thing you could change about this process, what would it be?
Right.
Yeah. So
that's
these are
the
some
idea.
Examples. So once we've gone through asking a few of these questions, we want to go to the most important step, which is step five, which is ask more questions.
So it's all about follow-up questions. You're going to start with open-ended questions and just see where they go. And you want these questions to be ones that invite your users almost to tell you a story, to get really into their own personal experience. So the way that you ask them is critically important, because you want them to feel really, really like you're interested in them. That gives you the space to then ask a follow-up question. Do you have a favorite follow-up question?
It's back to, oh, tell me more about that.
What else? Great.
Yeah. And so once we've done all of that, then we have a much deeper understanding of the problem. And then we can start to think about understanding solutions. But until we've really understood the problem, we need to hold back on solutions. And we want to understand it from the point of view of the people we're trying to solve for, the people, our end users, whomever they may be.
Now, a question I get all the time is, how many interviews do I need to do? And what I typically say is, you want to do enough interviews that you've talked to a variety of people in your user group so that you're getting some of the diversity that is there. But then once you've started hearing the same themes again and again and again, you've reached what I call a saturation point, and you're done.
And I think we're done.
Yeah.
Aloud.
Hi, I'm Keneal.
And I'm Luke.
We're here today to talk to you about user journey mapping, which is one of the most valuable skills in the define phase of the design thinking process. And in this phase, your job as a design thinker is to really understand what is the problem that I'm trying to solve from the user's experience. So I've just explored a big problem space. I've done a bunch of user research in the empathy phase. And now I want to zoom in and get crystal clear on where am I going to invest my innovation effort and where am I going to start ideating. Before I ideate, I really need to understand the problem. This tool is really helpful.
Yeah, and so in order to really understand the problem, I want to actually map the journey that the end users and those related to the end users take to really sketch out and understand, most importantly, what are the critical pain points. Once we understand the pain points, then we can design solutions to address those pain points. So that's really the intention with this tool. So we have an example here we want to share. Based on some recent experience we both had landing at LAX airport and ordering a ride share, an app based ride. And if anybody's had this experience, they know it's ripe for pain points. Probably
I just redone the whole entire thing, and it's quite an experience.
Yeah, this is what we call an epic failure from a design perspective. So, so we want to map out the users. First, let's map out the rider. So the rider lands in the plane and has is ready to get to their location. So maybe their satisfaction is right here. They're optimistic that they're going to get where they need to go. Next thing they do is they easily order a car, and this is their ordering, and then they walk to the terminal. It's a little far. Their satisfaction dips a bit, and then they're greeted with
go really far away.
You
need to walk way across the airport. No matter what terminal you're in, you need to go to this one central place. And that's where every other single person is going to go. But you don't quite know what's going on. And then you go like way past the last terminal.
Yeah. And so you get on a shuttle or you walk into a very remote parking lot. And
there's a guy playing the piano.
Right. And so once you're on this shuttle, they take you to this remote area, and then you see a mass of humanity with four lines, four queues. And you, based on which app you've used, you get in a queue, whether it's a taxi or one of the other apps. And the queue is quite long, and it doesn't seem to have any order. Your satisfaction is quite low at this point. Finally, you get to the front of the queue. You give your driver a code, and he or she lets you in. And then finally, you're on your way, stuck in LA traffic, right? So this is the journey of the rider. It'll look something like this. The driver maybe looks something like they get a notification that they have a new rider. They drop off their old ride. They're happy about that. And then they discover it's at LAX. So they're probably not very happy. And then they wait in the queue for quite a long time until they finally pick up a rider with the code, and they're on their way. And so you can see there's a trending down in this general direction. Other drivers, maybe we want to look at other people in the environment. So perhaps a driver has to drop off another passenger or is driving a bus, and they're approaching LAX.
And this would be like a regular layperson, right? They're not a rideshare driver. This is the problem that this new design was supposed to alleviate is all the traffic, right?
All the traffic. So these are other drivers, traffic on the road. And so they know they're going to LAX. They're not feeling happy about it. And perhaps they are greeted coming into the airport, maybe with a little less traffic than they had before, but there's still quite a bit of traffic, still some long lines. LAX will tell you that they made this process much smoother for the other drivers, and they're on the way. So this was kind of the original design, was to alleviate traffic in general. So What we want to do is clearly identify the pain points. We can do that by marking red. And so there's several clear pain points around getting to this remote parking lot and then waiting in the queues. And we want to think about designing to these pain points.
Without sacrificing these high points, which was the intention of the new design. So this lets us now look at like the entire ecosystem of what's going on over time and figure out where do we want to zoom in. This helps us really define our problem. And now we're ready to start ideating.
Yeah, so whether you're arriving at LAX or you're deciding what to have for dinner, or you're looking at a way to roll out a new strategy in an organization, to onboard new employees, or just create more alignment in your team, you can use this tool to really understand the journey of the user. Okay, so we're going to walk you through some tools related to brainstorming. If you remember, in our design thinking process, we've gone from empathize to define to ideate. This is kind of the juicy part where we can actually start exploring and brainstorming new ideas.
Yeah, and there's a lot known about do's and don'ts of ideation. So we're going to share with you some of the stuff, and this is really grounded in research. There's tons of data on this, so listen up. It can be really helpful. So the first thing when you sit down to brainstorm is to frame the brainstorming session with a specific pointed question that's grounded in insight. And one of my favorite question kickoffs is, how might we? And then you fill in the blank. So I might point back to some user research I've done and some customer journey mapping, and I might say, how might we alleviate wait times for drivers at the airport? How might we use technology to alleviate drive times at the airport? Would be even honing in even closer. So you can get as specific as you want. It's really great at this point to bring some of that data into the conversation to just bring everyone back to that place of user empathy and remind them of what's been learned out in the field, talking to real users in their native context. You can also bring in inspiration from other sources, such as competitive research. So what are some competitors in this space doing? Or from my favorite, analogous areas. So it could be that one place where things are really highly, highly efficient is in an operating room. So what can I learn from that extreme environment and I want to bring in as a facilitator to inspire people to come up with efficient ways of doing other things, like doing a pickup at the airport, if that's the problem that we're focusing on. You can apply this logic, by the way, to any problem at all that you're focusing on in a brainstorming session. And we're picking one example that from a prior video, which is improving wait times at LAX airport for rideshare customers and drivers. All right, so now you've framed the question in insight and you've shared some inspiration, and it's time to facilitate your brainstorming session. Always begin with a creative warm-up. Most of us are coming in pretty cold, we're in a different mode of thinking, and it's time to warm us up and get us feeling comfortable with each other. One of my favorite warm-up activities is we all stand in a circle and everybody very quickly just name the movie. If your life was a movie today, what movie would today have been for you? Another one might be, if you were a superhero today, which superhero would it be?
Hey, Kenil, what's your superpower?
Oh, my superpower? Challenging people.
<That's true.
laughs> what's yours?
Mine, if I was a superhero today, it would be one that could probably walk through walls, being cooped up in a studio all day.
Oh, yeah. Right. Sounds good. All right. So we've done a warm-up now. We've just gotten to know each other a little bit, and it's very real time. So I understand where he's coming from, where I'm coming from. My energy's feeling a little lighter, and I'm ready to have fun. Okay, then I'd want to offer the rules of brainstorming as a framework, and I would put these up on the wall or give them as handouts so that everybody in the room remembers the rules of brainstorming. The first and most important rule is defer judgment. What does that mean?
Defer judgment is back to this piece around having an open mind and holding off on believing that our answer is right or that it's not feasible, that an idea is not feasible. So there are no wrong ideas mm-hmm. with deferring judgment, right?
Yeah, right, absolutely. I also don't want to judge my own ideas. So we often get so in our heads we're scared to share our own ideas. Super important skill is letting go of that self-judgment, let the idea out. You never know what idea it might spark in somebody else.
And don't worry, there will be a time when we actually do look at feasibility. Otherwise, mm-hmm. this doesn't work. But mm-hmm. for now, we want to just the idea is get as many ideas out as possible.
Right. And that's another of the rules of brainstorming is go for quantity, not quality. When you get a massive quantity of ideas out there, you have a much higher opportunity of one of them being highly original and highly useful and one that nobody else would have thought of. So you need to kind of get a lot of the predictable ideas out before you start getting into the really interesting, innovative stuff. Third rule is go for wild ideas. So you want to go for ideas that are very far in the extremes, things that are really risky, things that you think to yourself, that'll never work, or they'll never give us the money for that. And you also want to think of ideas that, you know, that make you a little bit shaken up. So going for wild ideas helps you get to those original ideas. Third rule, build on each other's ideas. So if Luke were to share an idea with me, I would want to then take that as a seed. Where, how can I let that inspire me and build something else? And then what if we did this? And then what if we did this? Okay, important for keeping the conversation on track is to focus on that key topic. So having it up on the board helps people keep coming back to it. Then another rule is one conversation at a time. And brainstorming is one of those activities that really feeds the nervous system in a very exciting and positive way. It gives you a little bit of a rush. So we can easily get into a mode where we're so excited, we begin to interrupt each other, and now we're having 27 different conversations at a time. This is why having a facilitator is super important. They can help bring back that focus. All right, lastly, make it visual. The more you can bring visual aids and even tactile experiences into this, the better. So drawing pictures if you're a drawer, using photographs, even just using different colors stimulates the brain in such a way that you're going to have more creative ideas. Okay, you know what one of my favorite tips that I want to talk about next is how to prevent groupthink. So I know I've been in brainstorming sessions where one person's really, really dominant, and they say an idea, and then suddenly the whole group starts only focusing on that idea and building on it. Maybe it's a person who has a lot of power, like, you know, it's my boss and everybody else's boss, and so we really want to kind of follow that person. It's really death for the brainstorming process, right? Because we're not going to get diverse ideas, which is key. So what I have them do is everybody first writes down a bunch of ideas on their own without talking to each other at all. This is individual brainstorming. It might just only be 5 minutes. And then I have them share and begin to build on each other's ideas.
Yeah. And so when we share, do you want to talk a little bit about maybe what is the process for sharing?
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to talk about it?
Let's do it. So post-its, right? So
yeah.
These are every design thinking hobbyist or expert's friend or post-it notes. A few things about post-it notes. I'm guessing you can't quite read this. There's a couple of problems with this. We only want one idea per post-it note, so use as many post-it notes as you can. And you want to use a dark Sharpie, not a light Sharpie. So this
nice big thick one
is the best way to do it. Use one idea with a thick marker so everyone can see it. And give everyone an opportunity to not only put their post-it note up on the board or the wall or the glass, but also as they do it, to take just a moment or two and explain the idea. We're not, this is not a monologue or soliloquy. It's just a phrase or two about the idea. And what that does is allows the opportunity to build on each other's ideas, right?
Cool. And as you're putting up your post-its, you might start noticing that patterns are emerging for you. So maybe I'm noticing that there are a whole group of ideas related to best way, or we're building on the best way idea. I might want to cluster those together. Now, the cool thing about doing this in post-its is later on, I might realize there's a different cluster. Like, there are some of these ideas that are really, really expensive to pull off, and other ones are really inexpensive. We don't necessarily have a preference at this point, or maybe we do, but we can cluster them and keep rearranging them this way.
You can't move flip charts, you can't move chalkboards, you can't move dry erase boards, but you can move post-its.
Also, moving your body is one of the last tips I'll get. So when you're up and active and you're moving things, it helps stimulate the brain and get those creative juices flowing, keeps everyone awake, and it can be just a ton of fun. Great break in the workday. So have fun with the ideation stage.
Aloud.
Today we're going to talk about 2x2s, which is a very useful tool for the ideate stage of the design thinking process.
Yeah, so this tool comes a little later in the ideating phase where we've generated all of these ideas, a lot of blue sky thinking. We have this massive volume of ideas, which is right where we want to be. Mm-hmm. Now, what do we do to start to, we've opened up, what do we start do to start to narrow the process and really decide what are the ideas that are worth investing in and mm-hmm. pursuing a bit further? Mm-hmm. So this is a really great tool to start to narrow that process and give us a filter and a lens to look at that. So it's a very simple tool. We have an X and a Y axis, and we can really put anything we want on these axes. The two that I prefer, that I think are most useful, is high impact. So which of the ideas are going to have the biggest impact on our strategic direction or on our organization or on whatever problem we're trying to solve? And on the other axis, how much time is it going to take? What is the time allocation? What's the fuse on this? So these are quick and these are slow. And then we take these ideas that we've generated in the brainstorming phase and we place them on this grid, the 2x2 grid. And so upper right is going to be high impact ideas that are easy to implement. This is the classic low hanging fruit quadrant. The lower right, high impact ideas that maybe take a little longer to roll out. It's just good to know that it's not to say we don't invest in them or pursue them, just good to know that they're going to take a little bit more. And then at some point we draw a line around either not yet, we're not going to pursue these ideas, or it's really clear this idea here is not one we're going to follow through on because it either is not, this in this case is not going to have the impact we want. Mm-hmm. So this is just a really nice filtering system, and you can swap out anything on these axes. A few other things we like are resource, how many resources, how much money is it going to take, how much time.
How much political support is there for this idea? How inclusive is the idea already?
How long does it take to get to market or implementation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can really slice and dice this any way you want to. And you can actually do this multiple times after one ideation session to just get a real feel for which ideas keep winning. Regardless of the 2x2.
And there's one other tool that you sometimes can snap onto this, which is the voting tool, which we'll talk about in some of our trainings. But this essentially, everybody gets one or two votes or maybe three, and they can just make a little mark on the sticky note once they've seen it on the map. So then you get a little bit of a heat map about where everybody's energy's at. What does the group mind think around what ideas we should proceed with?
Aloud.
In this video, we're going to dive into a tool used in the prototyping phase, which is storyboarding. Now, there's a lot of different ways we can prototype. Some of them are quite fun. We can make 3D models of things that we're designing. If we're working a technology, we'll look at, we can story, or we can map out, prototype the UX experience where maybe we draw out, sketch out what the app or the tool looks like. And in this tool, storyboarding, it can be used very broadly, which is why we wanted to teach it today.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the design thinking mindset is we go for scrappy. We don't need high fidelity, you know, 3D model might actually be made out of toothpicks and straws and cotton balls. I used to have a big cart that just had a lot of different art supplies in it, and you can literally glue them together. And there you have a prototype so you can test an idea out in the field. That's where we're trying to get to. So our first objective is we want to be able to flesh out an idea that we selected in the ideation phase. Second objective is we want to be able to flesh it out so much that not only do we understand it, but another potential user could understand it and they could interact with it in some way so that we could learn in that test, is this really going to provide you value? So that's really the bar. It doesn't need to be pretty, and you'll see, you know, neither one of us is a skilled artist here.
Definitely not.
We were able to represent a journey that somebody might go through if they happen to experience using our solution, our idea. So a little bit of setup here. What were we trying to storyboard, Luke?
So this is, we wanted to think about onboarding new employees, right? Mm-hmm. So often, generally, their experience of onboarding in most organizations is pretty good, with the exception of onboarding people into strategy. This is a problem we see in a lot of different organizations. So we thought, what would it be like to look at onboarding through the lens of onboarding into strategy?
Mm-hmm. So we came up with a lot of ideas. And this tool, again, can be used in any context. It can be used to storyboard a new way that you want to do your morning routine. It could be used to to look at how do we want to improve the car buying process. So there's lots of different applications. We just picked this one example to walk through it because there's not really a lot of good examples out there on how we can apply design thinking in an organizational context. So in this idea, what we found out after just this kind of vague post-it note idea that we would look at the onboarding process to get better strategic alignment, we realized, okay, really this process begins in the job hunt. So we're not really leveraging that opportunity right now like we could be. People are all sitting down, usually at a computer, and they're reading a job description. That's a great place for us to drop our strategic mission and something about our long-term strategic roadmap. Now, we don't have to give any secrets away, but that's here.
And so as you see, each phase in the journey is its own sheet, again, with a dark colored marker where you can see, and it's just a rough outline. It doesn't need to be detailed. And the idea here is it's a tool to do what Keneal is doing, which is to walk through, to kind of pitch through this idea, to explore it together. So this is, each phase has its own sheet.
In the second phase, we've got the employee being interviewed here. They're being told what the strategy is, asked some questions about how this person can contribute to the strategy. The person is really getting excited about it, like, wow, I'd love to be a part of this, what an exciting company. And then they can get really clear on, here's how I can contribute. In the third phase of our idea, it's day one of their employee experience. They're walking in on their very first day of working there, and they're given a swag bag that's filled with, you know, a t-shirt that has the mission on it and a really cool copy of the strategic roadmap and maybe a manifesto. So these are some artifacts that they can bring home and have around with them and leave it at their desk as well as references. Then they're going to sit down with their manager. So there's like in that first initial handshake period where you're really meeting your new manager for the first time, the manager is going to go over your strategic roadmap with you and walk you through not just what the strategy is for the organization and the team, but really you personally, you new employee. Here's where you come in. Here's where you can create impact. And here's why you in particular as an individual is really, really valued here. Lastly, there's going to be a monthly meeting with the co-founders where the co-founder gives a strategic update and really grounds everybody again in those like core fundamentals of where are we going in the near term, the midterm, and the long term.
So you can see with this process that Keneal's just gone through, it gives me an opportunity to ask her questions. Maybe I have a new novel idea that is inspired by what could be in the bag or what might the roadmap. What roadmap might we use for this? So it allows a bit of an exchange, a bit of idea generation by going through each of these phases together.
Now in design thinking, the tools are often really essential. So here we use individual sheets of paper. We've got some double-sided tape on the back that lets us move them around and put them in a different order. It also allows us to scrap individual sections. So as we test it later on, we'll be able to iterate. All right, see you next one.
Aloud.
Hey, it's Luke.
And it's Keneal.
In this video, we want to give you some do's and don'ts around interview questions.
How to ask interview questions when you're doing empathy in the field. Okay, we're going to start with the don'ts. Hi, I've got some questions to ask you about how you currently organize your finances.
Okay.
Do you like organizing your finances? Yes or no?
No, not really.
Can you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is I hate it, 1 is I like it?
7.
7. Okay. What don't you like about it?
I don't like the tension that I feel around it and the disorganization, I guess.
Okay. And how do you share your financial records with your family? Spouse, your partner, your
how do I share
parents?
My, I don't share it much, I guess. Maybe just what's necessary.
And when you share it, do you use electronic records or paper? Okay, that's a don't. All right, so all the stuff I did wrong there was my questions were totally closed-ended. Like, I didn't give him any space to elaborate or for me to really learn anything at all about him. It was almost like I was conducting a survey and I was a robot. I also asked him a quantitative question that was really, really tricky to answer, where he had to rate something on a scale of 1 to 10, and it felt really backwards the way I was asking it. He also, I dropped a thread, so he said something sort of interesting there, in one of the questions and gave me a little bit more information that I could have dug into about his life, but I chose to just plow ahead and ask the next question that was written down for me. Also, you noticed that my vocal tone was really, really flat, and I didn't seem that interested in him. I seemed much more interested in just getting through my interview. I'm here holding my phone, I've got my iPad, I'm reading my questions, and I'm just not engaging with him. So if he doesn't feel like he's interested in me, he's not gonna wanna give me much information. Now, here's how I could do it instead. Hey, Luke.
Hi.
I'm really curious about the way you organize your financial life. Is it okay if I ask you a few questions?
Oh, sure, yeah.
No, oh, you seem interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to share, yeah.
Where are you now with, do you do any organizing with your financial life? Or?
Yeah, I have a budget and I use a couple of apps. Yeah, I signed up with a few different services that help me, and then I have an accountant. And
oh, wow. So you're that's a lot of different things. This, this feels like it's something that you spend quite a bit of time on.
Yeah, it's important.
Great. Important to you. I want to learn more about how it's important to you. I'm also really curious about the apps that you mentioned and the services. Can you tell me more about those?
Yeah, I mean, I use a planning app. I use a credit monitoring app to make sure that everything's still, like, there aren't any surprises or fraud. I use some stuff through the bank. I use some stuff to communicate with my planner and my accountant. Several different tools that help me just, you know, have a better handle on how I'm doing. And then I also, I use spreadsheets for my own budget.
So, yeah. And are these tools and practices that you've picked up over time?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, it's been over years, right? Yeah, working with different people over years.
So at this point, you can see there's so many threads open. I can go down any direction. I can be really interested in what he's saying. I could ask about why it's important to him. I could ask about, you know, tell me a story of when you learned one of these things. I could get more interested in, like, the fraud element of it and why that matters to him. So there's just a lot of different directions we can go. And part of it's because I'm engaged. Part is I'm asking open questions. And also, I am following the thread. And if I can't follow the thread, I let him know we are going to come back to this. Because I want to validate everything he's sharing to make him understand that what he has to say and his point of view is really, really important to me.
Yeah. And so to avoid having to have your head in a notebook or a laptop, you may occasionally ask if you can record the conversation. Some people don't want it, or depending on the topic, that's not possible. Or maybe you just take a brief little cliff notes, just as a way of staying really engaged and present in the conversation.
Aloud.
Hey again, it's Camille.
And Luke.
And we are back to talk about the final phase of the design thinking process, test. So we have learned about our users. We have defined a specific problem. We have generated a bunch of ideas. We built a prototype of one of our ideas. And now we're going to go out into the field and test it with the users that we empathize with in the very starting place. So for this example, we are going to be testing out a prototype for a brainstorming kit. So the problem we're approaching is, how can we help organizations to be more creative? And the idea that we want to test is, why don't we give them a kit? So, Luke is going to play the part of my fearless user. I'm going to go and meet him at his workspace and give him this kit, and we'll see what happens.
Come in.
Hi. Hey, how are you? It was so great to see you again. We developed something, and I wanted to have you take a spin and just see what you think of it.
Okay, great. This is for me to help me to come up with new ideas.
Well, what does it look like it's for?
Yeah. It has lots of markers. That's great. Mm-hmm. What's this do?
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. Sprayed myself in the eye. And okay, so I can draw pictures with this.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, what do you think? What were you trying to achieve there? You were opening it up, and what were you trying to understand about that?
I was just wondering what it smelled like.
Okay.
I guess I could... okay, what's in here? This box here. Okay. Okay, yep. These things are kind of sticky. All right. Let's see this. So this one.
And what are you doing now?
It's just going to draw some happy little clouds.
Is that something that you like to do often?
That marker's not working. Yeah, I like to draw happy little clouds.
Why is that important to you?
It just makes me feel peaceful. Mm. Yeah, it makes me feel peaceful. It's not really working. Some of these markers aren't working.
Oh, what's the writing that's on? I noticed there's some writing on the side of that one. Did you happen to notice that at all?
Yeah, it says Expo. Okay. Mm-hmm.
What else does it say there?
Wet erase. Ah. Okay, so maybe I can... Okay. I can maybe do this. Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. Okay, great.
And then was that something that you'd seen, or I just pointed out the text? And
yeah, no, I've seen it, yeah. And now, okay. And now I remember how these markers work, right? Okay, that's very cool. Yeah, I could definitely use these for sure. Okay. Some of them. I mean, some of them were kind of dry, but...
Great. Now, what, you know, where do you think you would go with this next? So you've just opened it up, experimented with some of the materials. What do you think you could use this for, if at all?
I mean, if it was, you know, if the markers worked and they weren't so stinky, I could imagine using this in my office with my team to help come up with new ideas. Mm-hmm. It definitely needs a little work, but I do like the idea. I mean, there's a lot in here I like. I mean, I like the post-its. I would want more post-its with different colors, but yeah, I can definitely see the value. And yeah.
And what would the colors do for you?
Because then I could have each color could represent a different kind of category of ideas or different things that we're working on. So I could have categories rather than just one, you know, one color.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for taking a look at this. Now, I'd love you to keep it for a week. And if you find a use for it, you want to test it out with your team, maybe, like you said, you might use it. I'd love to get your feedback, and I'll call you back in a couple of days and see how it's going.
Yeah, that's fine.
Great. Thanks. All right. So that's a little example. And there, some of the skills that I was using was I was mostly observing him, right? I was just watching it unfold. I didn't interfere at all as things started falling out, or he was misunderstanding how to use something. You know, if it had been something dangerous, I would have, you know, from an ethical perspective, protected his eyeballs. But I knew that it was water and it was fine. And I also, you know, I just wasn't trying to guide him too much. However, I noticed that he missed that detail about it being a wet erase marker, and I really wanted to see what it was going to be like when he tested that one out. So I decided, okay, I've given him some space to see if he can figure it out on his own or if he's interested, and he wasn't. So I decided to just subtly direct his attention there by seeing if he happened to notice the writing on the side there. I wasn't trying to specifically ask him if he liked it or if he didn't. On his own, he told me that some things were useful, some things weren't. And usually users will kind of do that. They'll give you some feedback easily. Now, had he been a bit more quiet, I could have asked even more questions.
Yeah. And so you notice this tool is a lot different than something like collecting a survey. This is really based in the direct observation, the ability to understand the context, the ability to follow up. It's one thing to send out a survey digitally, even if we're asking more open-ended narrative questions digitally. It's much different than what we've done here, which is live, interactive, person-to-person experimenting with whatever it is that we're offering.
And it's done in his own context, right? So he's actually at work, and that's a good place for me to test it. Lastly, this is very, very different from market research, or, you know, seeing if he gets satisfaction, if he likes this, if he's the right user for this, or how he would rate it. Really, I'm here to learn just as much as I was in the empathy phase. Because remember, design thinking is iterative. So I'm here with a beginner's mind, trying to see what else can I understand about Luke and his environment and what he cares about, and this problem space by seeing how he interacts with this. So I did learn some new things to bring home, like he wants to have multiple colors of post-its. In my next iteration of this, I'll definitely take that feedback to heart, especially if I hear it from multiple users. So it's all about learning, and this is the final step. Of course, you're never done. It's always time to iterate in design thinking, and I hope that you go out into the field and get your hands dirty. Thank you so much for being here today and listening to today's skill building session on design thinking. I hope that this piqued your interest. There's so much to learn when you apply this lens to the world. And if it gives you even a little bit more inspiration to open your mind to things that you may not have otherwise seen, to understanding your customers, your teammates, your employees better, then I think you've done your job here today.
So you can check out again the videos if you didn't get to watch them. They're all available for you at allowedpodcast.com, as well as links to further resources around this topic. If this was interesting to you, I have a lot more where this came from. I actually have done a ton of work and research in the fields of creativity, innovation, and design. And I'd like to hear if this is something that you want to hear more of on Allowed. So please get in touch with me. You can leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Thanks again. Thanks for being here. And we'll see you next week.